This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This week, the Clarets kick off their new campaign and it's another season back in the Championship. This is the None and Ever podcast. None and Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to the None and Ever podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and listeners, we are back for another season of your favourite podcast and the analysis show. This week, I am joined by my colleagues, Tom Whittaker and George Poole, and we are going to be looking back at a very surprising, slightly unexpected, maybe we should say, but fantastic opening victory away at Huddersfield. It was all change. It was a new look Burnley side and one that we just didn't know how was going to perform on this Championship stage. A new manager, a whole new defence, most of a first team completely changed, and most definitely a new formation. But the Clarets brought it home. It was an emphatic victory by anybody's standards, and one that has suddenly got the entire footballing world sitting up and taking notice. Gentlemen, welcome back to another season of the podcast. How are we both?
Evening, Natalie. I'm a lot better after Friday.
Yeah, I bet. George, come on, give us some positivity. How are you?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, I think we all just wanted to record this podcast as soon as the final whistle blew on Friday, so feels good to get around to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, listeners, we desperately wanted to get this done, but our social diaries didn't quite get us all together until Monday night. Before we get into a deep dive of what happened on Friday night, let's start with some immediate reaction. And you know, I'm going to go relatively easy on you because, you know, we're colleagues and we've worked together for a long time now, and I adore and respect you both. But I think it's fair to say that both of you two were definitely not on Camp Sunshine before this season started. Tom, I'm going to start with you. I guess, just in general terms, what was your immediate reaction to that game on Friday night?
Yeah, I've been, kind of up to that. I've not been that sort of, I wouldn't say like, I'm not doom and gloom about this season, but neither have I been sort of on the same train that a lot of people seem to be on. Oh, this is going to be brilliant, you know, new style and all this kind of thing. I was a little bit sceptical. I was up for the game, you know, and then I was outside the stadium and I saw the team come through and I just thought, what the hell is this team like? I think it hadn't really hit me, you know, how many players we've sold and perhaps we've still got one or two gaps to plug. So when I saw that lineup, it screamed Sean Dyche FA Cup third round. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
oh, okay, that's fair. That is fair.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw that team. I thought, God, it's like square pegged in round holes. Thought there's no wingers. There's a young lad making his debut. Charlie Taylor appears to be playing centre half, and my enthusiasm waned a little bit. And do you know
your
what?
Enthusiasm waned? I will not share the message that you put in our group chat. But I think to say your enthusiasm waned is somewhat of a what's the word I'm looking for? Let's just leave it there. It was more than that.
Friendly version of what happened. But do you know what? Hold my hands up. I was miles off because it was absolutely fantastic. That first half was just, honestly, anybody that I've spoke to about it, I'm just gushing. I can't believe how good it was. Like, you know, I wasn't expecting too much from these first few weeks. You know, I thought it's a new manager. I think we had eight debutants, so it's a whole new team.
Yeah.
a new style of play. And I thought, well, it's going to take us a bit of time to get going. So, you know, I said, well, they asked me the other week when we were doing the preview podcast, what thought probably a draw, we'll probably grind out a draw down there. But honestly, the football was just sublime. It was brilliant. You know, I've said before, I'm not a fan of this. Pass it sideways between the centre halves. I think it's unnecessarily risky and it's slow. But there was none of that. You know, they took risks, sure, but they paid off. And it wasn't just passing for the sake of passing. Every pass was looking to open them up. It was looking to do something. The formation was really clever. It was really innovative. You know, you said about Taylor playing centre half. To me, at times, it really looked like we were playing sort of three centre halves. So you had Harwood Bellis, the out and out centre half, and then sort of Taylor and Roberts were dropping back. Matson and Costello kind of playing, what would you call it, right, kind of right wing back almost. position for him, because I thought he was a centre forward, but did the role brilliantly, I thought. And then it was just like four centre midfielders, and they were like a swarm. It was like any time a Huddersfield player was on the ball, suddenly there's two Burnley players on him. And it must have been an absolute nightmare for him to play against, because it was just, honestly, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Every time one of theirs got the ball, two of ours are on him. Every time one of ours picks the ball up, you think there's no option. And then Roberts would just appear out of nowhere, switch it, and it'd be, and then suddenly somewhere would have 30 yards of space. The football was phenomenal. And it's like, that, you know, that kind of tippy-tappy stuff. Never really been a fan of it, but that was it. It's absolute best. And you could see what we were trying to do. And I just think it's incredible that he's got that going, like, you know, with
so quickly.
I could talk for an hour about it. It blew me away. I was so impressed. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
That's exactly the intro that I wanted from you, Tom. It's like, and I think that was very much summed up what we all thought. And I think, George, we shouldn't really be giving Burnley fans a hard time here. I know there's a lot of fans, particularly on Twitter, who get on your back if you're not relentlessly positive and you dare to question anything. And I think it's fair to say that the concerns that Burnley fans had before the season started were justified. We'd lost the 90% of our squad. You know, a brand new manager who is untested at this level, hasn't yet managed in England. We were being told that he favoured some really modern tactics and this really strange attacking formation that we've not yet seen. I think it's, you know, I didn't think any of us were expecting to be chanting Olé 15 minutes into a game. What was, I guess, you know, without going over some of the points we're going to talk about later, what was your view? Like, how did you feel at halftime?
Yeah, I'd like to take this moment to point out that I predicted we finished second this season. So, you know, maybe I was one of those.
Hang on a minute.
It's on record.
And I'll tell you something else. There's a hell of a lot more messages that I'm going to share where you absolutely do not. I am not having that, George Poole. You absolutely did not put us at second. I think you had us liquidated at one point in our summer group chat, so don't give me that nonsense. Anyway, carry on.
Well, as we all know, the real opinion's quite on the podcast. Now I haven't got a second. But I was in Camp Tom. When the lineup came through on 7 p.m. on Friday night, I thought it was like a proper laughing stock. I thought, hindsight, I was completely stupid. But I thought, Costello, why on earth are we playing some random kid up front? Like, this is like, we've been in the Premier League 6 years and this is the state of us. I thought it was a proper joke. And I think I was also really disappointed that Jay wasn't in the squad, because I just thought, oh, it's his birthday, he's destined to score. So I was really gutted about that. And then I saw Charlie Taylor at centre back and I just thought, what on earth are we doing? Like, why have we brought in so many centre backs and Charlie Taylor isn't playing? And I think, you know, at 7 p.m. you were justified to think this really couldn't, this might not be good, because like you say, we'd lost so many players, brand new manager. I you know, admittedly I did say, oh, we'll finish second, but I at the same time I said, like, for 6 months I think we'll struggle and we'll be up and down, because I just can't see it working in such a small space of time. But I think at half time we're all just sort of gobsmacked and blown away, and you could just, like Tom said, it wasn't just that we were winning, it was the manner in which we were winning. It was easy. And I don't say that
very
lightly.
Easy.
It was genuinely like watching men versus boys. Yeah, Tom's touched on the fact that we were around them like a pack of wolves. But going forward, it was really clever in that you had Cork and Cullen were everywhere.
Oh my God, it was so good.
Whether they were picking the ball off someone or they were passing it, they were everywhere on the pitch. But Brownell and Bastian, they had the keys to the town of Huddersfield. They were just chilling in the Huddersfield half, and it seemed like every pass straight through the middle of the pitch would find one of them. and then they'd turn and they'd have the opportunity to spread it left to Mattson or right to Costello or Roberts. And it was just like we say, it really was easy. And yeah. I think at half time it had sort of eased many, many concerns.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, this isn't a small, you know, insignificant championship side that we were facing. This is Huddersfield, and they were playoff runners up last season, and they had a phenomenal season. And yeah, they've lost a couple of players, and I think their manager was obviously a huge blow. But the gulf between the two teams should not have been as big as it was. Tom, let's stay with the issue, a particular one that's been mentioned a lot, of Charlie Taylor playing at centre half, because I think, like you say, when that team sheet came out, and particularly the bench, oh my goodness, that didn't look pretty. That was the one thing that immediately jumped out. We were all very curious as to who would start in midfield, because that's probably an area where we're most happy with at the moment. You know, what the pairing would be up front, but you know, defence, we didn't really know how it was going to go. And I think it was quite right that most Burnley fans said, why on earth have we bought 455 centre-halves to bring Charlie Taylor in there and play there? However, the answer was very much that Mattson is going to be a much stronger left-back than Charlie Taylor. I think that's probably where we've got to with that.
Yeah, and I think what Mattson is doing a different job to what Taylor was doing last season at left-back. You know, he's a lot further forward. I think Taylor's always been decent getting forward, but I don't think you're never going to see Taylor bending a right foot finish into the bottom corner, you know, like Mattson did. So there's obviously, when we brought Mattson in, I thought, oh, well, that's Taylor gone then, you know, because I thought, well, how are you going to fit both of them into the same team? And neither of them is going to want to sit on the bench. But yeah, I mean, the job that Taylor did defensively was really good. I thought, you know, you don't often see a fullback winning headers and things like that. So that's a part of his game that he's obviously had to adapt. I don't think he's a kind of a Ben Mee kind of centre-half, like stuck out on the left. I think he is an out-and-out fullback. So yeah, I think he adapted to that side of it really well. Didn't see him. I think Roberts was playing more of an attacking role than Taylor. Yeah. I think probably he's a better attacker. You know, he's got a goal in him, Anthony Roberts, whereas Taylor, I don't think Taylor's a
goal. Roberts doesn't like being a defender. Roberts is a frustrated winger by 100%.
Yeah, that's in it. So you could sort of see Roberts doing that job that Mattson was doing almost probably in a different game. But it worked really well, you know, with them. It looked like three centre halves really, where Harwood Bellis was sort of the out and out centre half, and then Taylor and Roberts are kind of dipping in and out. It was so fluid, you know. It was no wonder Huddersfield didn't have a clue what to do in the first half, because I didn't know where Arsenal were playing.
No, but it worked, same. Didn't it? And it's
so clever the way they set up. And I think it must be especially difficult for someone like Taylor, who has had such a defined role for so many years, you know, and such a used to, you know, playing in that sort of strict, rigid way. So to step into a completely new role like that, I mean, he wasn't playing like that against Shrewsbury, so I don't know if he's done it in some of the other pre-season games, but he picked it up so quickly and he was fantastic. Yeah, didn't put a foot wrong. So, and it's encouraging for me because I think he's a good player, so I'm glad to see that we've got a role for him and Mattson in the squad.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point there, George. I think one of the things that stuck with me, and this is Daniel Bentley, who was one of the original founder members of Known and Ever back in the day. One of the things he tweeted was that, you know, whilst he will be forever grateful for everything that Sean Dyche did for us, we were subjected at times to some pretty unattractive football. And it wasn't just the unattractive football, it was the same thing every single week, which just became, in the end, very easy for coaches and opposition players to counteract and nullify. The fact that this season we've got such a dynamic and new formation, we've got a modern thinking manager who isn't following, he's creating the new football that's being played, and we're a completely unknown entity in the Championship. We have got back an element of surprise. It's going to take the Championship three quarters of the season to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not interested. There's this Twitter trend at the moment to go and bury Dyche. Not bothered by it at all.
No,
I'm not saying you are. It's really annoying me at Twitter at the moment. I'm just like, who cares? Like, it's been and gone. Stop doing this. You don't need to. You can just compliment company as it is. And like
it's a fair comparison, though, George. It's a fair comparison.
No, it's not. No, it's not actually, because like you said to me, Natalie, and you were right to say, oh, Dash hasn't managed in championship in 6 years, and he hasn't. So he hasn't had the chance to manage in a championship, you know. But yeah, that being said, let's go on to the positive. The companies, what you called 4-2-2. Yeah. And that's what we all like expected ahead of the game. But when you watch the game, it wasn't that simple. I mean,
no.
Roberts was sometimes playing as like a three at the back with Taylor and Howard Bellis. But then going forward, instead of being a 4-2-2-2, it was really a 4-2-3-1 because Barnes was the most advanced. And you had Costello on that right wing. On the left, you sort of had Bastian drifting, and he's had Brownhill. But then you also had Mattson just like bombing it down the wing. And it was just carnage. It was beautiful, beautiful carnage in that you had no idea who was going where. Well, Huddersfield didn't have a clue who was going where. But
yeah,
for us, it just worked so well, and it was so fluid. And you can tell teams will have looked at that and gone, wow, that's going to be tricky.
Yeah.
And you're thinking of the analysts at the other clubs, they're going to be struggling. And you look in hindsight now and you think, I tell you what, tactical masterstroke not to show any of our pre-season games to fans.
Definitely.
Even Danny Schofield mentioned it in his post-match presser. He went, we've really struggled to get any footage of what they were going to set up to be like, and we got it wrong in the first half. And you know what? It's a shame that we couldn't see any pre-season games, but I tell you what, it didn't half pay off.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. And that's just, again, it's just, we are bringing ourselves into 2022, 2023 football. This is a modern approach. It's being creative. It's finding ways to win games. And what I didn't expect, George, was for us to be the trailblazers of the championship. I didn't expect us to be coming and outsmarting every single club. And like you say, some of the coaches, with all respect to some of the coaches, but they won't have the resources within their clubs to even know what the next step is to counteract us. And that should make for us a very successful season if we keep this up.
Yeah, I can't remember who tweeted me, so apologies to whoever did it, but someone said they watched the West Brom game. Was it yesterday that West Brom played? And oh, sorry, on Saturday or Sunday, whatever they played. West Brom versus Middlesbrough, was it?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, and they said...
Burrow went ahead, didn't they? And West Brom equalised quite late on.
Finished 1-0. And they said, like these two are favourites for promotion, but whoever tweeted me said... I didn't get enthusiastic for what football they were playing. And I watched some of it and I thought, they were playing good, nice, good football. Like, these teams will be up there towards the end of the season. But I thought, wow, compared to what we played on Friday night, like, we were so much more fluid, so much more dynamic. It was so much prettier to watch. Like, I was in team camp Tom in the summer. I was thinking, I personally find Manchester City one of the most boring clubs to have ever watched. I think they're rubbish to watch.
No.
They just pass it for the sake of passing. Whereas Liverpool, they attack. They attack a team. They might not have the same amount of completed passes, but boy, are they good to watch. And I thought, I was really worried. I thought, we're going to lose that bit of like under dice when we attacked. You know, there was a reason for us attacking, and I'm really worried about that. But I'll tell you what, I take it all back, because like Tom said, there was so much intensity to everything they did. And it was so dynamic in what happened, in that you had Cork and Cullen, sometimes Bastian, sometimes Brown, all them triangles they were making in the middle of the park. It was just sensational. It really was. It was like, I just want to say the plaudits of Mattson. I mean, what a player. My dad's one of these who's like, oh, I don't know how it's all going to gel. Who are these new players? It's all too much.
Papa Pool doesn't like change.
No. And few of us do. But at half time, he went, that Mattson, a player.
Really,
and
good.
I think that just like, that's all I needed to hear. It was like, he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I think what surprised me most, Tom, was that one of the players that had been hyped up beyond anybody else, I mean, obviously we knew Cullen was going to be very good, but the one player who'd been hyped out of all of our signings, and probably the one we knew most, was probably the one who had the most invisible game, and that was Scott Twine. Like, we thought he was going to be the new McNeil, the creative spark, the one that was going to lead the new revolution. And actually, his free kick was very unlucky to hit the bar, and he had some really great sparks of brilliance, but he wasn't, in my opinion, man of the match contention or a shining light, I think.
No, yeah, I agree with that. Cullen, for me, was a standout. I think the problem for Twine, you know, he came on as a sub, and I think had he started, I think if he'd have been playing that first half, he would have had a bit more joy.
Yeah.
The time that he came on in the game, I think Huddersfield did get a bit of a foothold. I mean, they didn't threaten us, but they sort of stemmed the tide a little bit. So I think it was a more difficult kind of, you know, it's not, I mean, we had a lot of the ball still, but I don't think we were creating quite as much as we did in the first half. So difficult for him to come into that. I presume the reason that he didn't start is because he had a bit of an incomplete pre-season as well, a bit of an injury.
Yeah, he's coming back, isn't he?
So, I think we saw enough, like you say, with that free kick. I mean, as soon as we got that free kick, everyone in the away end's like, oh, here we go. And it wasn't far off, was it, to be fair. It was a decent hit. So I think, you know, I think the biggest thing that you'd say where you could see the team improving immediately is on that right-hand side. Costello, like I say, didn't play badly at all, had some really good feet, but the end product was lacking a little bit. And I don't think Barnes is the kind of player that you want to slot into this kind of team. I think you can see where he could do a job for us this season. And then I think in the last 20 minutes of the game on Friday, he was holding it up well. He was winning the little free kicks, chasing down lost causes, that kind of thing. That's the job that he'll do well. Whereas, you know, Twine is more the kind of player who's going to have that impact from the start where it's nil-nil and we're passing round teams and pulling them apart. So, yeah, you struggled to get into the game a little bit, but I think when you take all those factors into account, I think we've got a lot more to come from him, and I'm excited to see it.
Tom, sticking with you, the other surprise with the very late news that unfortunately Jay had sustained an injury and wouldn't be played was that surprise call-up of Costello. I think it's fair to say that he looked a little shaky in front of goal, but he was a fantastic addition and an incredibly exciting talent. So I guess, how do you summarise his first start?
Yeah, I think, like I say, I think he was better in the build-up than he was in the finish. Surprised to see him on the team sheet, first of all, and surprised to see where he was playing. I mean, if you think that the left-hand side, it's Martin, who's a sort of a natural left-sided attacking player, left-back kind of slash left-wing. I think you're asking Costello to do, first of all, a job that, as far as I understand, I don't think that is his normal role. Certainly not a right-back. He's more of a centre-forward, so it's a position he's not played before. It's a level he's not played at before. So when you take all that into account, I think he had a really impressive, a really impressive debut. He didn't look out of place at all in the build-up. He could lay it off. He had some nice touches, some nice feet. I think obviously just what let him down is a couple of good opportunities that he didn't finish, and especially the one where Mattson got the ball over and he's on his own at the back post. Maybe could have headed it. Maybe could have had a touch, or maybe just finished it a little bit better. I mean, he dragged it well, wide, bless him. But yeah, I think there was enough there to show that he's got a bit of promise. And I think it's an area that we're still a bit light in. You know, there's more rumours this week of incomings out wide. But when you think of the options that are there at the minute, it's basically Barnes and Rodriguez. And Rodriguez was injured, and obviously JBG, a lot of injury problems we know. So how much we'll see of him, I'm not sure. So yeah, I think it's nice to think that we have got an option that we can get out of the under-23s that doesn't look out of place, like I say. And in the last few years, George mentioned, you know, previously that interview that Pace gave where he's talking about going out and winning games and talking about a better pathway for young players into the first team. I think, like you said, I think it's a bit churlish to put that at Dyche's door. I think it's more a reality of, it's easier to win games in the Championship, and it's easier to blood these players in the Championship.
Yeah,
but
it's
nice to have that opportunity, you know, one of the positives. And hopefully we're starting to see the work that's been done on the youth academy in the last few years start to bear fruit.
George, another player who I think most people have probably got down as man of the match was the absolutely incredible Josh Cullen, who slotted in that role in the base of midfield like he'd been playing there his entire life, and looks like an unbelievable steal for $3 million. Like, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, certainly. Not to blow my own trumpet again, you know I hate to do that. When I went on Radio Lancashire before the game, and they were like, oh, who's going to be you most looking forward to seeing? I said, Cullen. You know, he epitomises everything we've done right in this window, in that he has been brought from Anderlecht with company. He's almost like a Vincent, but on the pitch. He knows that system inside and out. They've done it at Anderlecht for 3 years now. And Cullen, you could tell we'll go on to the rumours about Benson coming. But you could tell with Cullen's leaving videos at Anderlecht how much they all loved him. They were all, you know, hugging him. It was a really nice video. And it just showed how much he meant to all the players and staff there.
Oh,
and
I remember that. Yeah,
it was lovely. Interesting that Benson had sort of similar treatment at Royal Antwerp on Saturday night. So that's promising. But we'll go on to that later. But yeah. Cullen himself, absolute Rolls Royce. I know it's cliche and I've tweeted it's cliche, but I've never seen anyone look like more like it takes me back to watching Joey Barton at Burnley. It was almost like he was jogging around the pitch at times because he made it look that simple. And he's a short lad. He's a snappy. You could tell when he goes in for a tackle, he's making no bones about it. He's going in there to win the ball. And it just epitomised everything. What was brilliant about Barton when he dragged us up and obviously went 23 unbeaten that first season is with us. And I think just off that one game alone, I can just tell he's going to be very similar. He sort of sits deep and he's the first one all the game. My dad mentioned it to me. You could just see Cullen just asking for the ball all the time. He wants it at his feet because he knows he's going to drive it forward. And I'm no stat man, Dave, but I brought up the stats here. 98% pass accuracy. I mean, and they weren't. I've stolen them from Natalie.
Literally just stolen my link.
They weren't risk averse passes by any means. They were cutting through the centre midfield. Three chances created, a shot on target, which isn't mainly his forte. 10 recoveries, 2 tackles. Burnley ended the tweet with only one Josh Cullen, and I can't echo those words more enough. I was so impressed, and I'm going to pass over to Tom now. But Tom, were you as impressed? Because for me, this is the guy who's going to be our player of the season, and I'm calling it now.
Just hang on a second. Let me just give you, actually, before you come in, Tom, I will give you those full stats just to give him full credit, because we did get resident statistician Dave Roberts' stats for this. Josh Cullen's, it was 96 touches, 82 passes, 79 completed passes with a 95% completion rate. So that was the full stat that we were talking about there. But go on, Tom.
I wasn't going to be anywhere near as scientific or technical as you guys were.
We're doing our homework this year.
I'm very impressed. I just wanted to shout out, there was 2 or 3 times in the game where Cullen's like on the edge of the box, and he sort of like, is there a pass on there? Not sure. And he looks like he stood there with his hands in his pockets, really nonchalant. And then he just
does.
He finds a gap that I can't even see, and suddenly someone's clean through. Amazing. I love that little pass. Because I thought, and when I seen him against Shrewsbury, he was sort of coming to the edge of our box and just taking it off the keeper, kind of. But he was a lot more advanced than I was expecting. And yeah, that 2 or 3 times, like I said, it was just like a little toe poke. Really casual, but amazing. Like, the range of passing that he's got was superb. I'll tell you what I said to my dad. If we'd have had him in our midfield last year, we'd have had a better chance of staying up.
Yeah.
That's the kind of player we're missing last season. Someone who can just pick a pass like that, pull the strings. Because Westwood has got that in his locker, I think, but he only played like one pass repeatedly, didn't he, last season, whereas Cullen's got a lot more to it, you know, a lot more kind of variation in his locker, I think. So, yeah, really excited to see more of him. He was a cracking man.
Yeah, and speaking of those passes, which is obviously something that we've been talking about quite a lot with Cullen's contribution to the... So I'm very hesitant with our players' names, so I've not quite learnt them all yet. I still keep forgetting who we got. I keep wanting to say Westwood or something. 506 passes in that game, which is a club record in any league in our history for completed passes. George, this goes back to what we were talking about, wasn't it? About how we just didn't expect this game from them. But Cullen had a massive part to play in that. And that partnership with Cork was sublime.
That midfield will literally be the envy of every Championship club this season. It has to be. Jack Cork played for England 4 years ago. He's that good a player. And obviously Cullen's got a bright, bright future ahead of him. And I know you can take this with a pinch of salt, because obviously different level of opposition. That was more passes than City played in their game against Liverpool at the weekend.
we're
taking that. And obviously it's different opposition, but it just shows, it sums up the game for us. And you can look at the second half and say, okay, it was a different game. It was a bit more edgy. But at the same time, look, if you control that much of the possession, Huddersfield don't have a sniff at trying to... They have 30% of the possession. When are they going to get forward and make a move? And it wasn't just the amount of passes we did, it was everything we did with it, and we kept it in their half. We kept them back in their half all game. Even when we didn't have the ball, we were first to the man, first to the ball, just keep it with the pressing, just to keep them away from our half. And it meant that, literally, I remember during the second half, me and my dad were saying, they've still not had a shot on target. They've not had a shot on target. They've had one shot, and then there was that one where it bobbled and he hooked his left peg around. It went over the bar, and you're like, that's their first real chance. And you could just, all game, and you thought, well, if we have that sort of passing game against all teams this season, even if we're not scoring a monumental amount of goals, it will be difficult for opposition to come and try and score against us, because when are you going to have the opportunity?
Yeah. Tom, you've just put a quick message in the thing saying, what do you, just explain what you mean by that, because I'm not sure I follow what you were saying.
Sorry, yes. Just saying, following on from what George was saying about the way we had them pressed in their half. So it struck me like the last sort of probably about 5-10 minutes to go, it was around the time Twine had the free kick. There was a passage, probably about 5 minutes of play, where Huddersfield, you know, they're 1-0 down at home and they need a goal. And we just had them pressed on their own 18-yard line. They just couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Camp there, like, we were desperately knocking on the door to get a goal, like, as if we were 1-0 down. And the way we pressed is fantastic. And, you know, a lot's been made of the way that we've changed in possession now. It's, you know, it's all about keeping the ball. But it has a knock-on effect on the way we defend as well. Like George says, you know, if they can't get the ball off us, they can't score. And last year, you know, with Pope and Tarkowski and me, we're playing to our strengths. And the strength there was, you know, let teams have the ball outside of the box, because we've got one of the best keepers in the league. We've got two fantastic centre-halves who are getting away most of the crosses, most of the shots. And we obviously, they've all gone. And the defensive structures had to change because of that. But we're not just trying to replace these players who are pretty much irreplaceable. You know, the style's changed. And with that, the way we defend has changed. And now it's not a case of, you know, low block, dig in at 1-0 down and see what you can do. It's a case of, well, you ain't scoring because you ain't got the ball. So it's, you know, it's clever, not just from, you know, an offensive point of view and how we're building the attacks, but how we're setting up to defend as well.
Yeah, definitely. Turning to the game itself then, George, I mean, to be honest, there wasn't an awful lot that happened in that second half. I think the job was done by half time. But albeit coming on to looking at transfers in a minute, I'm not entirely sure that 1-0 will be a convincing scoreline for a lot of championship games. First incident that we had to look at, and one that I wonder whether was our first test of how we feel life post VAR. Penalty on Ashley Barnes, yay or nay?
Yeah, to be fair, like, I know you two disagree with me, but watching it from TV, this was just stopped. It looked at the time, we both in our house went, oh, what a cracking tackle. But when you actually watched it on the replay, I didn't see any touch of the ball. He took his legs from him, and you can say, oh, Barnes dilly-dallied, but it doesn't matter. Look, he was ready to strike, and he got his legs taken out from under him. So it's a penalty for me, but at the same time, it's one of them. Oh, do we want VAR? Do we not want it? Because it was nice. It was a nice game without it, but for moments like that, it makes you rue the day where we don't have it anymore.
Okay, well, I'm definitely in camp, not a penalty. I think it would be really harsh to be given. I think it may have been given in the Premier League, that's the way that the Premier League's going, but I didn't see it. So I'm going to give the casting vote to you, Tom, no pressure. Where do you sit?
I thought he got a bit of the ball, to be honest. I thought the same as George in real time. I thought he's played a bit of the ball there. And to be fair, I think if we're talking about VAR, could have quite easily, you know, if VAR decides to go a penalty, it might then go back and have a look and see was he onside, because that's quite a tight call as well. And
yeah, then that's true.
4 minutes waiting for some crafty to draw a line on the screen, and eventually the outcome's the same anyway. So, yeah, I'll take that without VAR. I much prefer it, to be honest.
Sorry, George, you lose. Unfortunate. But the other incident that we had in the first half, which was splendid and not disputed anyway, was, of course, Ian Matson. Am I saying that right? Is it Matson? Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe it's Matson. I've got the casting vote this time. I'm going Matson.
Why? That's not a rule.
I heard Tom say Matson earlier, and I was like, you know what? I'm sure company said Matson, so...
Yeah, but Tom's posher than the rest of us. He's the posh one of the team. So we'll
have that. Belgian accent. It's not as good as my Dutch accent. That's what it is.
Is that what it is? Right. Well, I'm going to go Matson for now, unless somebody comes on and if any of our listeners can correct me, fine. You know, God, our regular listeners know I'm terrible with names, so do correct me if I'm telling that terrible. So Matson, so strong on the wing. We had such energy and such speed in attack, and Tom, I think the goal very much epitomised that, and it was a fantastic effort.
Yeah, beautiful finish, like we were talking about earlier. You can't see Charlie Taylor cutting inside on his right and just bending the ball in the far corner. But I think it's difficult to talk about that goal without talking about that tremendous assist from Barnes. You know, the way that he trips over his own feet deliberately just to stop the ball dead, just so that Martin can go in and hit the shot. Fantastic, you know. An intricate bit of build-up play that's gone sadly underrated, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. One of the interesting things then, George, was that company has said after the game that he's not looking for an out-and-out striker. He doesn't think they'll get an out-and-out striker. And actually, they're very much of the opinion that the team's going to have to share the goals this season. Now, it definitely helps if your left-back's getting the first one. I still don't think Ashley Barnes is going to get us anywhere near enough that we need to. And obviously, Jay is now injured again as well. That's my only worry, I think. That's my only red flag from the euphoria of this weekend, is that if that's what we're saying, that we're going to have to share the goals, I'm not sure I saw that much in the side that will get us a lot of goals. What's your view on that?
Yeah. Do you not think it's remarkable that we've gone like 40 minutes into the podcast without starting to talk about the goal? It just shows how like exuberant.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly.
The performance in total. But I don't know. I feel like there's been a bit of misreading. What I took from that interview was that he said, obviously at the moment we don't have a goal. We don't have a goal scorer who's going to be prolific. So we're going to have to share the goals. I think he's still the back of my mind. He wants a goal scorer, but I think we've got to admit it's just going to be difficult to do. You look at the Championship top scorers last season. None of them are either ones that'll actually be good enough, and two, available. I mean, the likes of Pirro from Swansea, they're not letting him go. Brereton Diaz obviously isn't going to come to us. The rest of them are just like Lewis Grabban. You know, it's not for me, it wouldn't be for company. So I think there's a bit of like realism about it. But at the same time, I am confident that we can share the goals. You look at City, they've not had an out and out. This is the man every season. And I think I'm a bit different to Tom. I think what was a nice balance to us on Friday night is that we weren't just a team full of tricky little players. Barnes offered us, there's a balance in having like a bit of a brute up front and these creative players behind him.
Poor Ashley.
Because he held up the ball well to release the players who were better on the ball than him to do their job. So I think there's a nice balance there. But obviously we're going to go on to the transfers. And my dad was saying to me earlier, oh, but really, we need another wing attacking midfielder. Look, like Brownell and Bastien were playing. But there's 46 games in the season.
Yeah.
And if we're going to get these two lads that we've been linked to, there's goals in them. And I think what we're overlooking is Twine scored goals for fun last season. I think there should be goals,
George. Yeah.
Oh, look, it's a step up. And I'm firmly in the camp, not as that optimistic about him. I think what I saw from him, I think he needs to bulk up to be a good Championship player. I just think he looks like one of those League One, it's not as intense, one of the love League One lightweights, but I think put a bit of meat on the board and there's a heck of a player there. So
no, we just descended into the most Burnley chat ever. Like, oh, crack, like League One goal scorer. So if there's a player there, but oh, we need to put a bit of meat in the bones. But every now and again, we all fall into the most stereotypical Burnley fans ever. It's terrible.
It might well be, but I think there's definitely goals in the side. And from what I saw defensively on Friday night, 1-0 will do us. And, you know, going away from home as well, you can't get everything in the world, you know. A 1-0 win, I think we'll be having a few of them this season and they'll all be very valuable.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Arjun. I think sometimes I forget to give us credit for the things that we do very, very well. And it's, you know, generally speaking, if you look at the stereotype, a 1-0 isn't usually good enough for a Championship. There's a lot more goals. And you can get hit by, you know, or if you switch off, you'll get hit by, you know, there's a lot of goals being scored around. I keep saying that point. I can't think of what else I was going to say. But you're right. Our defence just looked incredible. Like, it was... I keep coming back to this point, but listening to all the commentators and all the footage that I've seen since, it's just, there's commentators and there's pundits just sat there gobsmacked going like, I don't know what I've just seen. Like, this is incredible. Let's go on to, I don't think there's anything else game-wise that we need to talk about. We talked about Castell. Oh, hang on, go on, George, what do you need to talk about?
I was just going to say, this is one of the things I was most impressed by Company on Friday night, is that in what he, and he's this isn't just he's come out with it on Friday, he said he's consistently through pre-season, is that it's all well and good talking about styles, but he wants to keep the things that are good at Burnley or in place, the defensive solidity, the hard work. And you saw it in bundles in the second half. I think, again, I don't know who tweeted it, but someone said they were as proud of the second half as they were the first, because whilst the first is all well and good playing this lovely football, in the second half, we grinded it out. We knew exactly how to finish out a game still. And I think, you know, it's going to be really important with us this season. And even, they're all trying to hype him up, all these pundits after the game were interviewing him, saying, oh, it was amazing that. And he was like, I'm not interested in the style. I don't want to talk about it. It's all well and good. But what I saw in the second half was that hard work. And that's what I asked for. If it takes a year for a player to learn my style, well, that's fine, as long as they're working hard. And I think that's one of the things I've been impressed by. It's like he's kept the hallmarks of what made the Dyche team really good, but added some sprinkles of magic going forward.
Okay, well, let's move on to the rumours that we've had circulated today about players that are going to come in, because there's, my gosh, we've been calling out for players forever, and the revolving door keeps revolving, and VK is not done yet. So the four main players that we've been linked with today, this Manuel Benson rumour is still going on. That's apparently supposed to be $4 million from Antwerp. Callum O'Hare still refuses to go on. I don't know whether that's dead in the water, because it was where he wants to go back in for them now that we've got the McNeil money. Two new rumours that have come around today are Darko Chernilov from Stuttgart and Jovan Cabral from Sporting Lisbon. Forgive me, I didn't do my homework. I don't know where each of those play. I'm presuming they're all midfielders. Tom, I'm gonna hand over to you just to talk about your hopes. And, well, I guess, are any of those, from what you've seen, realistic prospects or something that you think we really need to break the bank for?
From what I've seen, which is not very much, I've seen some YouTube compilations of Manuel Benson, Josh's brother, I think. He looks really good on them clips. And then the same for the chap from, I can't remember his name, the guy from Sporting Lisbon, the last one that you mentioned.
Jovan Cabral. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, I watched an 8-minute video of him today and he looked fantastic. But then I was like, well, if he's so good, why is he being linked with Bristol City and Burnley? And I looked it up and apparently he was on loan last year at Lazio and he got 3 games. So maybe there's, you know, I don't know, maybe maybe he had a bad couple of years, I don't know. But he looked like he got something about him. That's the kind of player we need, isn't it? Like a tricky winger. You know, you think if he was playing instead of Costello on Friday, would we have had maybe one or two more goals? It's that kind of player.
Yeah.
The chap with the Serbian sounding name, I'm not familiar with him.
Darko Chernilov. So Benson and O'Hare are both attacking midfielders. That's what their definition is. And the latter two, Chernilov and Cabral, are both attacking wingers. So we've got two more outward players and two more central players. I'm not sure. Obviously, we're not going to get all four of those subs. I suspect we're probably just going for four and the hope that we get maybe one each. But again, that George, very much links to what VK was saying about sharing the goals. And if we're not going to get an out-and-out striker, then he's going to have to find very attacking midfield players. But out of those four, which ones, are you most excited about? Which ones do you want to see in?
Well, the lay of the land that I see is that the sort of Serbian, that deal's not happening. He's been promised he's going to get first team football at Stuttgart this season. So that one's not
going to. So we can get rid of that. Okay.
We don't think that's really going to happen. And the rumours are that he's really open to staying there. Callum O'Hare, now he's got a hamstring injury. And word is it that's why he didn't play for Coventry at the weekend. That's the reason they gave. But it does actually seem like it could be like a serious, like a few months out. So that obviously that puts the nail on that head until January. But Manuel Benson, same as Tom, we've all watched that 5-minute YouTube video. And the most impressive thing is that was, you know, that was like 4 or 5 years ago whilst he was really young. And he looks like a prime Lionel Messi. Like, he looks brilliant. but he does come with, he's only 25, 26. He looks a real prospect. And left footer, just something a bit different. We love watching Goodmanson play, but he's not fit that much. And I think, like I said with Cullen earlier, the same happened with Benson. It was last night. He didn't play. Basically, this deal's finished. He didn't play. He came out onto the pitch afterwards in his grey hoodie, said his goodbyes to the fans, to the players, and they all lapped it up. You know, he's really treated as a, not God, but they really love him over there. And I think that's a nice hallmark of a player. And
are we in competition? Are we in competition with anybody else for him? Is it just
No, that one's happening. 4 million, you can so quote
Benson's
me on it.
Coming to us. Oh, there you go. Listen. Yeah, yeah. You can all go after George if it doesn't come out.
The Sporting Lisbon Weaver, when this news broke today, my mates know more about European football a lot more than me, and they were all absolutely buzzing about him. Will Lancaster, I mean, he's a journalist, so he actually does know what he's on about, unlike me and, well, just me. Unlike me, he knows what he's on about. And he said,
I was gonna say, really, just what? Hang on a minute. Why are we getting tarred with your brush?
I realised halfway through.
A shade.
I went, just me. But yeah, I mean, as a winger, he scored 14 goals in 68 games for Sporting Lisbon. And now we're a championship club. We can't just be seeing Lisbon as sort of just another European club. They're a really good club. And to go on loan to Lazio, I mean, there's something about him. Like Tom said, he only played 3 games, but who knows why that was. He might have been injured. None of us know at this moment in time. But just to go on loan to Lazio, heck of a player. And from what I've heard, when people have watched him play, really impressive talent. And it's just one of them. We've got to trust. Every player, every debutant on Friday night were brilliant. I mean, Vitinho came on. He were really good, and it was so fluid.
I've even forgotten about him. How have we not even mentioned we've got a Brazilian?
Brazilian, yeah. So Tom, it's remarkable.
We've got signing Brazilians.
I think we've just got to think, wow, if every single signing that played on Friday night impressed, heck, you know, let's keep them coming.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. My dad, like, was just like, he just sent me a message going, that's all right. We're signing Brazilians. Like, it was just like hilarious. And it's something that I didn't think we'd see it to. Right. Before we move on then, I'm going to ask you for the official team, none and ever, and Alistair Shaw, man of the match, please. Tom, you first.
I think Josh Cullen just gets it for me. Thought he was great.
Agreed. I'm going to give it to you, George. Who was your man of the match?
I'm going to defer to Vincent Kompany on this one, in that I love Cullen, but I feel like there's a bit of bias there because he's the sort of player I love, that sort of centre midfielder. But Kompany said I think he joked in his interview afterwards that he told Josh to give Man of the Match award to Ian because he was that impressive. And I think for a young lad as well to come in and play like that, I'm going to give Man of the Match to Mattson. And it's one of them where the goal swings it, really.
Yeah, Burnley fans usually give Man a match to whoever scores a goal, to be fair. Ask Bob Lawson, they always do that. For the second time this podcast, the deciding vote goes to me. And I'm sorry, George, the second time this podcast, you're going to lose out on that because I also went with Josh Cullen for Man of the Match. So, listeners, your official known and ever analysis team, Man of the Match, goes to Joshua Cullen. Okay, it would be a couple of things before we let you lovely listeners go. It would be remiss of us not to mention the fact that England are now European champions and our absolutely incredible Lionesses side, after what was just an absolutely awe-inspiring summer, have brought us the Euros for the first time in England's history. Linked very much to that, for those of you who haven't yet seen it on social media, we are absolutely delighted to be announcing that Team None and Ever has also expanded its team to add another female voice this season. And we are going to be joined by Georgia Rigby. Is it Georgia? Is it Charlotte? It's Charlotte, isn't it? Oh my God, she's going to kill me. So Georgia and Charlotte are sisters, and they've both got Island Ginge on Twitter. So she's genuinely going to kill me. Listeners, it's not Georgia Rigby, it's Charlotte Rigby, poor girl. She's going to be joining us this season, which is very, very exciting, and I genuinely can't wait. She is known to most of you on Twitter as I Love Ginge. But while we're on it, please do also follow her sister, Georgia Rigby, who's also a Burnley fan and is also great as well. And she's working at the early stages of this week, so we haven't quite we haven't quite been able to get her on this first show, but she will be with us, hopefully for the previous show, sorry, towards the end of the season. So please do make her feel very welcome. It has been an aim of mine to get a second female on the podcast for some time now, and she definitely... So, these two are giving me so much abuse in the chat box here for getting a name wrong. I mean, it's a fair thing. They are... it's not a fair thing. It's an awful thing, but they're now calling her... How are you pronouncing that? Our first... My goodness me, I'm not even, do you know what, listeners, I'm not even reading out this chat. They are quite rightly giving some reviews. So we'll introduce her towards the end of this week in our preview show. So please do follow her on Twitter. She's an absolute joy and we're very, very lucky to have her. And that just follows on, Tom, from, I don't know about you, but I've just been absolutely buzzing all day with that Lionesses victory. It is definitely some achievement.
Yeah, momentous, you know, after the kick in the unmentionables we all got last year from the men's team in the Euros final. It was brilliant to see the women go one better. Deserved victory. They were the best team in the tournament. And hopefully, you know, it'll mean that domestic women's football, you know, in the league structure kicks on. I know it's a bit of a shame that the women's team, our women's team these days play at Leyland and not Padiham. It's a bit harder to get to. It's a bit more out of the way. But I think they've got a really bright future, made some good signings this summer. It's nice to have Leah Embley back, so it's nice to have a proper claret in the
bench. Yeah, very happy about that.
Yeah, and I think the appointment of Jonathan Morgan, you know, so this is a guy who's got, you know, a team promoted into the Women's Super League before, so I think that's a real statement of ambition. And I think it'll be a really good season for the women's team. So if the listeners can get on and check a couple of games out, I'll be, they play a few games around the East Midlands where I'm based, so I do try and get to them if they're around there, so I'll hopefully get to see them a few times this season as well. And yeah, hopefully the momentum that the England women's team has generated this summer can kick on and improve the game at all levels in this country.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, George. It felt like the destiny of the summer, didn't it? It was a home Euros with an incredibly talented squad who were actually by far the best side in the entire Euros on there. And to lift that trophy at Wembley, I think England had to win. And I think they'd done very well to get to the final anyway. I think that would have still had quite an impact on women's football. But they had to lift that trophy up to have the significant impact that we all hope they're going to have.
Yeah, it was superb. And it's one of them. It felt like the right time. It sort of felt like everything was going in that direction. I mean, there's that infamous tweet from the England official Twitter account from 2015, which was really like... sexist, and you just think, you know what, ties back then, it's ridiculous to look back on. But the way they united everyone, you know, throughout this summer, I went and watched it at the pub in Waddington, and I think there was maybe one or two women there, and that was it. But the rest of them were all just men who were buzzing for it, and
yeah,
really, really excited and like really proud. Like when the goals went in and when the full time whistle went, and you just thought, wow, you know what, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, it wouldn't have been like that, but it just felt like everything was right. For this summer. So yeah, it was brilliant to watch.
I think that was the thing, Tom, that got me the most. It was, those of us who've watched women's football for a long time, you know the crowd, and it is a heavily female crowd, and a lot of school kids are there, and it's an amazing, the women's football community is a fantastic community. But this summer, the England crowds were more like what you would see at a senior man's club game. They were male heavy. There were lots of men there who were there in England shirts supporting them, not because it was trendy, not because they felt that they were supposed to, because they were enjoying the game. And if you look into the crowd when the goals go in each of the games, there is genuine celebration and genuine cheering from a significant number of what you would guess the unexpected crowd at England games. That was a difference for me.
Yeah, definitely. They've really harnessed a lot of momentum, I think, in the last few years. You know, the standards improved so much in the last few years. I remember when I started watching, compared to what it is now, it's night and day. And, you know, we're all football fans. If there's a good standard of football for us to watch, you know, we'll watch it. And that, you know, that's how it, so it proved. I didn't get to any England games, unfortunately. I did get to a few in the Greek games at Sheffield and Rotherham. Fantastic atmospheres, really good crowds. Like I say, a really good standard of football. And it's been a brilliant tournament. And yeah, the best way to cap it off is with an England victory. So yeah, been a great summer, and I'm looking forward to seeing that get harnessed as well next year. We've got the World Cup to look forward to as well, and I think
that
it's only going to improve from here. And if you get into the women's football, it just means you've got a tournament somewhere every year, which is what we'd all like, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think rightly so, the FA, I don't always like to give FA credit for anything, but I think, George, the FA deserves an enormous amount of credit for actually putting their money where their mouth is and investing in Serena Beigman, because she did not come cheap. She was highly sought after. We had to take her from, was it the Netherlands? She was Netherlands, wasn't she? And she's literally one of the leaders in the game. And we invested in them. We spent a lot of money on them. And they've got to get credit for that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all taken the mick out of going down the Phil Neville road a while back. But you look, it's night and day from then to now, to bring in this woman who was literally like, you can just tell in the way she just holds herself. She is the absolute pinnacle, the top of the game. And it's just one of them. I bet it brought so much confidence to the team itself to say, you know what, like, we are back to go, and we're sort of one of the favourites for a reason. And they did everything right throughout the tournament. And to be honest, in the end, although it went to the, obviously, extra time last night, it was just sort of, it was almost clinical the way they did it the past couple of games. They knew how to finish the job. Yeah. And I didn't have too many nerves going into extra time. It goes to show, like, they've been the best team in this tournament for a reason. And yeah, well played on bringing in Serena, because she deserves the keys to the city now.
Yeah, I think she'll get it. Tom, it was quite a battle against Germany. I think Germany and England were by far the better sides in the tournament, although I think England were better than Germany and significantly had a harder route to the final. But it was the scrap that I was expecting.
Yeah, a lot of major finals are like that, aren't they? It's not very often you see. I mean, even the semi-final, you know, beating Sweden in that manner, you just don't see that very often.
No, exactly.
You never get an easy win against Germany. So yeah, it wasn't a surprise to see the game go the way it did. I think the better team in the first half, but the second half, Germany got more and more on top. And the goal, I mean, an unbelievable goal! What a ball from Walsh! Incredible goal. And it took a moment of brilliance like that, I think, to get a foothold in it. I was the same as you going into extra time. I was very nervous because I think the momentum was all with Germany.
Yeah, it was.
But you saw, again, what you typically see in a final when it gets to extra time, it's very cagey. Teams are worried to make a mistake that leads to the goal, and you couldn't really see where a goal was coming from, and it's just a bit of an error at the back, which is something you've not really seen from either side throughout the whole tournament. The two best teams defensively by a mile, England and Germany. Just managed that toe poke and got the winner, and it was an incredible moment. And yeah, one that's going to, I think, it really will resonate down the years.
Yeah, well, massive respect. A couple of, well, obviously, the two goals were incredible. How Ella Toon kept her cool with, she had the German defender right on her shoulder and the keeper's coming out to her. I do not know how on earth she kept her composure to put that ball in the back of the net. But special mention, very Ashley Barnes-esque moment. Big, big fan of Alessia Russo trying to read the tactical note from the German player, then realising she didn't speak German, which was just the most funniest thing I've ever seen. That was just hilarious. Just that level of, well, you know what it is. I can't say it because we don't swear on the podcast. But yeah, when you saw it, I was like, absolute massive fan of it. And it's just like, oh yeah, no, I don't speak German, can't read that. But yeah, all good. So listeners, if you have enjoyed what you've seen this summer, I know all the talk today from, you can expect this from the international level, is to get yourself down to a WSL game. Don't just go to a WSL game. You know, the women's sport isn't just about the Premier League as the man's sport isn't as well. Go and watch your local women's team regardless of the team. And of course, Burnley women have their own team, and they are, you know, now professional. Alan Pearce has invested in them, and they have ambitions to get into the Women's Championship very, very soon. So get down and support them. George, sorry, did you want to finish something off before we wrap up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's been quite a nice movement I've seen today on Twitter, which, you know, it'd be good if people get behind it. Is the question, like, you know what, they're playing in, is it Leyland they're playing in? And
yeah.
You just think, right, you know, even if it's just a couple of games, get them playing at Turf Moor before or after one of our games, or at least in the Burnley area. I just think it'd be so much better, you know, capitalise on the momentum, and it'd be better if the Burnley women were based a bit nearer to Burnley. So
yeah, I think things like that.
A bit of momentum behind that on Twitter.
I think there's a cost element to that, and of course we can't just decide that we will play a game before because obviously we've got, you know, we've got our, the scheduling of the Women's FA, and so that's not necessarily that easy. But I do agree that there are enough facilities around Burnley that we can bring them close to home, at least bring them in the Burnley Padium area. That would be fine, not over in Leyland. So yeah, let's keep an eye on that. Let's see where that goes. Listeners, that is all we have time for. We have very much enjoyed this podcast. Burnley started their premier at, no, oh my god, this is what's happening. I can't get used to new players' names. I can't get used to being in the Championship. I can't remember who our flipping new signing is. This is terrible. Our campaign in the Championship got off to a flying start with a victorious and wonderful display. I leave you with just some of the comments from national broadcasters about our game. It was shocking. It was entertaining. It was direct. It was positive. There was a high press and a narrow formation, and it was just electric. My thanks as ever go to everybody who has contributed to this week's analysis show, to our colleagues George and Tom, who have been on the show tonight to give their thoughts, to a special mention actually again to George, who is guest producing while producer Matt Sun is himself on his holidays, so yeah, thanks for that. And obviously thanks to the rest of the team in the background who have also helped contribute to our first analysis show this season. Finally, my thanks to you, the listeners, for downloading and listening to this episode. And once again, joining us for another season here at None and Ever. Your support is always appreciated, and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.